Jamie Bernstein is an author, narrator, and filmmaker. Her memoir, Famous Father Girl, details her youth, growing up with her father, composer-conductor Leonard Bernstein, and her mother, pianist and actress Felicia Montealegre. This summer, Jamie Bernstein will introduce online airings of special Boston Symphony Orchestra encore performances from Tanglewood. The concerts will feature the BSO and Tanglewood Festival Chorus and will be available online on Sundays at 2:30 p.m., July 5th through August 23rd. Jamie Bernstein, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much.
Jamie, when you were growing up, let me ask you a question. Was there some confusion as to Bernstein or Bernstein?
Well, it's my grandfather, Samuel Bernstein, pronounced it Bernstein. And, you know, it's just one of those Ellis Island things. I don't know why sometimes it's Dean and sometimes it's Stein. And you would not believe how many different and conflicting explanations I have heard over the years. By now, honestly, I don't care that much, as long as everybody is good friends and everybody loves music.
Well, that's so interesting that you say that, because one night I was in a restaurant and I walked by a lady, who stopped me and said, "You're a disgrace. You said Steen when it's Stein, and you should know better." So some people take this very, very seriously.
Oh, I know they do. And I used to take it more seriously than I do now, but I've sort of given up. You know, people will, they just don't hear the distinction. And I will introduce myself as Jamie Bernstein, and they will say, "Very pleased to meet you, Ms. Bernstein." Like, they didn't even hear it, you know.
Jamie, how'd you get this very impressive gig? I know you've done incredible things yourself, but there's only, you know, one of these people who's going to be handling this BSO and Tanglewood, performances from Tanglewood. Why do you think you got the gig?
Oh, well, first of all, let me just say that I was so thrilled to get this gig because it was an actual capital G gig where you go somewhere and do something with actual human beings instead of just being on a Zoom like I have been doing for the past 4 months. It was just a complete thrill to be in real life doing work. So that in itself was a complete gift from heaven. How I got the gig? Well, I mean, I've had a long history with the Boston Symphony Orchestra. I have worked with them a lot over the years. I did many, many radio broadcasts live from Tanglewood, announcing the broadcasts over the radio. And I have narrated many concerts at Tanglewood of one sort or another. And I have worked at Tanglewood as a teenager. And of course, I was there dozens and dozens of times when my dad was there working. So with one thing and another, me and Tangle would go a long way back. Plus, Tony Fogg, who is the artistic administrator, is a dear friend, and he was the one who emailed me and asked me whether I could do this. And my answer was a resounding yes.
He's an extraordinary man, isn't he? I mean, I love the guy. And you think of the talent he has to put all of that stuff together every summer, and then when somebody fades out, he's got to be the one who picks up the pieces.
That's right. And he's that really unusual combination of visionary and idealistic and pragmatic and can do, you know. That's a great combo, because that really is the combination that makes exciting things happen.
You're so right.
So in this emergency that we're all in, and you can imagine what he went through trying to find ways to keep this summer's Tanglewood season alive in some fashion. And it must have taken a lot of creativity and a lot of tenacity to come up with ways to do that. And he's come up with many wonderful ways. So I really salute him.
I want to ask you, you spent a lot of summers in the Berkshires. Where did the family stay when you were there?
Well, you know, the way it worked in the summers was that we spent a little bit of time each summer in the Berkshires. So we never actually had a house of our own up there. It was always a rental of one sort or another. And so when my father went up to work with the students every summer, he would, find this house or that house to stay in for the week or 2 weeks or however long it was. So it varies a lot. We've stayed everywhere from Hillsdale to Monterey to Great Barrington to Tyringham, all over the place.
That really is a great story because I can only imagine what it must have been, what the bragging rights must have been to have your family there. How is it to be the daughter of such a famous guy, and now you've achieved a lot of fame yourself? But how is it to live in that skin?
The short answer that I've come up with when I get this question is, well, it wasn't boring. And the longer answer to the question is my book. And that's why there was a book to write, because my childhood and my growing up were an amazing story. And they were, and you know, I lived in an amazing, exciting, creative environment with all these astonishing people that I came into contact with as a result of my parents being at the epicenter of mid-20th century culture in New York City. So we've had amazing people coming through our doors and sitting at our dinner table over the years. And it was very consequential times, an era in which to grow up. So in my book, I try to evoke that era, the 1960s and 70s, and what it was like to be a young person in those years. And there was a lot to tell because, those were, turbulent, changing years, everything in flux, not unlike now, actually, in several ways. So that's all part of the story that I tell.
You're so right. The name of the book, of course, is Famous Father Girl, and people should read it. That's all I got to say. Let me ask you, as a West Sider myself, grew up on the west side of Manhattan?
Part of the time, yes. We moved a couple of times in my youth. I started out on the west side, then we moved on up to the east side, and then we moved back to the west side.
Interesting. So I lived on 96th Street. Were you close by?
My parents, the last move they made was to the Dakota building, which is on 72nd Street and Central Park West. So that's probably as far uptown as we got on the west side.
It's a very famous building, of course, because it's where John Lennon was killed, right?
That is correct. And I was there the night it happened, and I heard the shots, and I write all about that in my book. So if anyone is curious to know more about how that night went down, it's all in my book.
Tell me about your career. It's been fascinating. You really have taken up the mantle of your father's work educating young people, haven't you?
Well, it sort of turned out that way. I didn't do it on purpose. I was doing all sorts of things, including for a while pursuing a career as a singer-songwriter, and then I got married and had my kids, and so there were all sorts of other things going on. And then I inadvertently fell into this business of talking about music, at first in front of young people, but then going forward to all kinds of audiences of all ages and backgrounds and locations. And so after a while, I came to realize that I had found a very good solution for myself by mistake, because making music with my own body drove me crazy. I was very neurotic. But by talking about music and sharing my own excitement about music with audiences, I found it to be very gratifying work, and it kept me in the world of music. So I travel, I'm on the road, I'm going to the rehearsals, there's all the adrenaline of the performance, there's hanging out with my musician pals after the gig, all that fun stuff. I'm just not making the music with my own body. So in my book, I describe it as having cut off the ailing limb to allow the rest of the organism to thrive. So I'm a kind of musical amputee, but I'm a very cheerful and pretty high-functioning musical amputee. So it all seems to be working out for the best.
Now, when your parents had all of those famous people in the apartments that you were in, some of whom were quite controversial, were you ever nervous about that?
Well, not really. First of all, when I was first growing up and was very little, when you're little, you don't know who your parents' friends are. They're just your parents' friends. So when I was little, I had no idea who they were. And by the time I did know who they were mostly just good friends of the family. And so there was no need to be intimidated. So that was a very lucky turn of events, because it meant that I could really appreciate the time that I spent around these luminaries without being terribly self-conscious.
Well, Jamie, your father had a lot of guts, that's for sure. Do you have the same quotient of guts in you?
Well, I guess, I don't know. You know, I mean, if you have the guts to do something, it means that it's something that you're able to do, and then you don't think about how much guts it took, if you know what I mean. So, for example, getting up in front of an audience and talking is something that some people hate with every fiber of their being, and I like it. It doesn't bother me at all. So I don't think of that as having guts. On the other hand, performing music in front of people made me a complete blithering, whimpering mess. So I didn't really have enough guts to pursue playing music myself. So maybe that's
actually
one way of looking at it.
Actually, Jamie, I was thinking about political guts. I'm a political scientist, and political guts, he took on some very unpopular causes at the time.
Oh, yes, so political guts. That's a whole other can of beans right there. My father was very outspoken in his political views. He felt very strongly about how one has to do everything one can in the course of one's life to try and make the world a better place. He took that very seriously. And so he did, even though he knew that from an early age, the FBI was keeping watch on him because they were noticing about all these different organizations and movements that he was readily joining, everything from the civil rights movement to protesting the Vietnam War and on and on and on. So he knew that the FBI was on his tail, and he knew that his phone was probably tapped, and he didn't care. And the message that we kids grew up with was, if you see an injustice or you see something in the world that isn't right, you speak out, you go out in the streets, and you make a noise. And we did as a family. We protested the Vietnam War, all marching together in Washington, D.C., and stuff like that. And, you know, sometimes both my parents got in a lot of trouble for being outspoken about their politics. But that's what they did.
Congratulations, Jamie Bernstein, who, I will tell everybody, will introduce online presentations of BSO performances at Tanglewood. Available
Sundays.
And
they're great ones, too. Really good ones.
I'll bet they are. Available Sundays at 2:30 p.m. from July 5th through August 23rd. To learn more, visit tanglewood.org. Jamie, it's been a great pleasure, and I so thank you for doing it.
Oh, thank you. It's a delight to speak to you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.